Hello and welcome to Playwright, a podcast about creating and sharing new ways to play. My name is Ryan Heyman. You can call me H.
And I'm Ryan Quintel. You can call me Q.
As of the time of recording, and this is going to be entirely useless information for anyone listening to this at the time of the podcast release, but we're in the middle of the Steam Summer Games Festival. Have you had a chance to download and play any of the free demos that have made themselves available?
No, I'm going to have to go to store.steampowered.com and check out what's out there. I do know I had my own little games crisis this morning as I woke up, raring to go, ready to download Episode 1 Racer on my Switch to find that there was a delay yet again for its release.
But really? Last minute delay?
Literally, there was a news article that said delayed just hours before it was supposed to release.
Wow.
But they didn't manage to get it out later in today. So Episode 1 Racer is out, but I'm sure that's not the most exciting thing I could find in comparison to the Steam sale.
I played, the demo for the Destroy All Humans remake, just because, you know, I liked Destroy All Humans when I played it back on the original Xbox, and I kind of considered picking this remake up because I thought, like, such a fun concept, you know, it'd be so easy to just kind of put a new fresh coat of paint on it. And I was a little disappointed that it is just seems to be like a straight remake. Like, it seems like such a simple, open-ended concept. Like, if you have the mechanics down, just like, why not, you know, do something new with it? But, you know, maybe it's just catching people up with the in-depth backstory of Cryptosporidium and the other aliens invading Earth.
I'm seeing right now on Steam's homepage here something called Hydroneer, which, of course, by title alone sounds like a Ryan game.
It sounds like, yeah, your kind of game. I also played a game called A Rhythm Doctor, which is really cool. It's one that's been on my wish list for a while now. And it's basically like its intent is to teach you how to count out complex musical rhythms. So, you know, like 7/12 time and stuff like that. And it does that by kind of putting you in these kind of funny situations with these little kind of musical mini games. You just kind of have to tap the space bar during the, you know, a single note in a measure. So whether it's like the seventh note in a measure, the fourth note in a measure, like it's always going to be on the same beat every time. And it's quite challenging. It's very demanding and not very forgiving when it comes to, like, sometimes, like, even getting it just a little bit off will kind of incrementally decrease from your score and you end up kind of failing a track feeling that you did pretty well. But it is pretty cool. The music's really nice, and they do some really creative and really kind of fun stuff with the game window. The first level starts you off doing kind of following a beat. They kind of lull you into a false sense of security for a little while, and then they start introducing some kind of graphical effects that make the visual cues harder to see, which is fine. You shouldn't be following those anyways. They do some kind of like record skipping and stuff like that, like DJ style repeats and skips and stuff that make it more difficult to time out the sixth note of the measure or whatever it was. And but, you know, as long as you got the beat, you can stick to it. One of the levels minimizes the game screen and like floats it all around your screen, which is probably pretty cool for most people. But not for me, who has a 3-monitor display with two different resolution scales.
Oh, no.
So that one, yeah, I don't know. I might have to write in a note to the devs saying that, like, hey, in all possible setups, this might not be ideal, but still really cool. I'm glad that they're trying something new with that, but it's really creative and quite a handful.
Hey, let me ask you this. I guess two things. Number one, do you feel like you're getting better at counting out those complex rhythms? And number two, did the game crash as it was bouncing around the monitors?
It didn't crash, but I think it was kind of hovering off screen more than it intended to be.
Got it.
And it's hard to tell, like, what is just the game being playful and playing hard to get in a way. And
this sounds
what
like
is
early Kojima playfulness.
Yeah, right. I don't know if I'm necessarily getting better, because I feel like I have musical training and I have like a pretty good sense of rhythm already. I feel like the first level, I mean, I did the first level on my first try, no problem. The remaining levels, like I could pass them, but it wasn't pretty. And I don't know if I spent more time with it, I probably could get better in just like knowing the songs, but they do start to introduce harmonies and kind of dissonant melodies playing at the same time and having to count them each separately, which
That's
is
interesting.
Quite difficult. And I can imagine there's room to improve in that.
Wow. I always love when games can sneakily teach one about skill they might not readily possess, but it seems like you had some training there backing it up. I wonder if it works the same for people that maybe don't.
Well, I'd be very interested to see how this kind of sits with other people. Again, probably too late for people to download the free demo as of the time of listening to this. But if anyone did play it, then please tweet in to us at PlayerightCast. We'd love to hear your experiences about it. I'm interested in comparing notes.
Very cool.
Anyways, let's get to some creative ideas of our own. Q, you're going first today.
Okay. I feel like I may have pitched something like that before, but that's the way it is on this show. So I'm really interested in the idea of an RTS, like your Age of Empires or StarCrafts, but I've always been searching for the RTS that will focus on the area of the game that I like more. And then I kind of came to this realization of what if, quote, team is two people? And maybe it could be more people. We can discuss that too. But one person who's kind of base building and economy managing, and another person who is your kind of commander in general and in charge of coordinating a fleet and troop movements and that sort of stuff. But you have to be in tight communication with each other, talking about, potential troop needs, potential army moves and things that you're trying to do, or respond to different situations. But now you can kind of do a more exotic, exploded view for the economic side of an RTS, as well as potentially the tactical side of an RTS.
All right, and we're starting the clock there. Were you picturing this as being multiplayer, or is this something where you would have kind of like CPUs standing in as advisors or generals or these other roles?
Yeah, I guess you could totally have some sort of rollback to CPU, but I'm thinking literally if there's a four person match that in a traditional RTS, that would be an 8-person match potentially in this game.
This almost kind of reads, I like that bit at the end that you included where you're managing both the kind of front lines movements as well as kind of economic type of situation. It almost kind of puts you in the shoes of a president or somebody who has that kind of more kind of supreme control. I mean, there are games like this, like Civilization has you balancing economy and culture and war efforts at the same time, and Tropico and stuff like that. So I'm kind of curious how this differentiates, but also like this could be kind of an interesting online multiplayer, kind of like a model UN in a way where you'll have several people kind of collaborating to support each country and trying to ultimately find peace or work towards, you know, the betterment of their own country, or all of this against more kind of like global level threats, climate changes with the localized climate changes within an area that decreases crop production. And so that makes one team of players get rather desperate and either potentially lash out at the other teams or try to find better kind of economic solutions. I don't know.
I think that's a great wrinkle to explore in the RTS space, which is like a map resource availability changing and shifting throughout the course of play, almost like taking a cue from Battle Royale's Closing Circles, but instead, gosh, these old city building sims, Pharaoh, Cleopatra, Caesar, where you would kind of build these ancient towns up, you would have things like flooding events where planes would become unavailable to farm on, but then after the flood, you would get potentially a boon to harvest in, you know, around the area of the flood. So what was left is maybe partially bolstered. So, yeah, I don't know if the what I'm imagining, right, is you and I are playing the same team. So we represent Team A. you are the general, I'm the economics guy, or vice versa. We have to be talking constantly of, like, you are telling me, hey, it looks like the other team already has flying units. Like, you don't actually have, you can maybe place orders or something for units for me, and I have to produce them. And maybe that is in a way where we don't actually have to verbally communicate. That's probably preferable. But the idea is you and I in constant communication trying to say, okay, what's needed next? Like, I'm asking you, hey, what your style of play, is it more conducive for me to be upgrading the defense of the units that you have, you know, moving up tech trees and that sort of thing? Or do you want to unlock cloaking or something like that, and I'll build in that direction?
It'd be interesting if one of the paths that you can explore, kind of upgrading your tech tree in a way, is language development as well. So if, you know, you can kind of verbally communicate with opponents within maybe certain zones, or you can receive incoming messages, but unless you've put research into language, then it comes through as, like, it garbles the audio. And so you can't actually understand what they're saying. So you have to either kind of, like, if they're, you know, offering you money and they send a message along with it, then the message is garbled. You can kind of only assume from context what they could be paying you for. So it's kind of how much you want to be a nation on its own versus how much you want to work together and kind of come together as, you know, the human race.
That's interesting. Okay, so now we're in a, like, languages developing. I wonder if you do a system of, like, placing orders and fulfilling orders and, like, making economic suggestions, because maybe, like, you, the economics person, has insight into the economics of the other team that the general doesn't have, right? So you both are getting information about how to complete this or how to gain this victory that the other doesn't have. And so maybe you are making your suggestions of, like, oh, I think we want to, you know, start developing sea vessels or something like that. I think we might want to adopt this other doctrine, and it's going to make our unit upkeep lower or something in the long run.
And it would be interesting if all of these decisions, even within your own team, were kind of a zero-sum game. You know, you're balancing the nation's budget, and for every decision that you make to support one system, another system isn't getting that same level of funding. So you have to kind of, you know, since players are managing each system, they don't want to be the ones who, you know, maybe, you know, for the greater good, they can put that, those feelings aside, but, for now, you want to try to keep all of the players on your team happy as well.
Yeah, that's kind of interesting. I'm wondering if there's, like, some mechanic too, where if people are placed into roles where you can kind of vote to switch in mid-match. So you kind of are like, oh, maybe the communication is broken down a little bit, and you kind of offer maybe a temporary control, almost like a share your mouse or something with a friend to the to the other player. And so they can maybe, like, I think between pinging, if you did, like, the RTS or the MOBA style pinging system, but you brought an Apex Legends like detail and automaticness to it, that you could actually have pretty robust communication with another player without speaking in an RTS.
To take this to a level higher, you could even do kind of simulate entire planets of people, each kind of managing their own nations, and then occasionally have other planets come kind of within range, within orbit. And, you know, at that point, it's a great opportunity for trading, or they could be a hostile planet and you don't know, you don't speak their alien language. And so you kind of have to, like, feel out those interactions of when a planet passes close to yours, will they be friendly? Will they start firing interplanetary missiles and try to, you know, rob you?
Oh, man. Imagine a game that started at the scale of an Age of Empires, like, very RTS sim. Then as you defeated the, like, immediate cities around you, you grow into the civilization type model where you're managing, like, entire peoples, and it just keeps getting more macro until you're in the, I guess the Stellaris level, like we are a planet and we're doing trade routes and stuff.
That's kind of what Spore did.
Right, right. I guess it is the, it is still an alluring idea what Spore was trying to pull off.
I wish there were more Spore. There was,
Spore-likes?
It was Dark Spore. That was a sequel. That was like a Diablo-style action game set in the Spore universe, but there was never like a proper Spore 2, I believe.
Yeah, you know, let's give it to the Outer Wilds people. I have confidence they could pull off anything.
Yeah, that'd be interesting. All right, so we've got kind of a multi-level, multi-tiered system of collaboration. Another thing that I think back on, if we're talking about kind of interplanetary, is the movie The Day the Earth Stood Still from back in the 1950s, where it's set during the Cold War and humanity has developed missiles that are able to leave the Earth atmosphere. And so in doing that, they are essentially entering the galactic community in a way, because now they're a threat to the survival of other races outside of the Earth. And so, you know, it's this alien comes down to try to explain to them like the stakes of the situation and what's happening. And the, you know, the Americans and the Russians are bickering and nobody trusts each other. And the alien is just like, guys, you're all from the same planet. Like, who cares? Like, just work out your own problems. Like, this is bigger. This is like, you are a part of like a proper community now. Like, you can't even think about, but like, you know, the problems on Earth are still problems and people are still, you know, trying to eat and people are trying to get rich off the backs of other people. So it's just interesting to see kind of the multi levels of what constitutes an important situation in light of everything else that's happening.
If we could, you know, we're into philosophy here for a second here, but if we could just uncouple personal success and having that in many ways be tied to the lack of somebody else's success, that would be an amazing accomplishment for our species.
Yeah. Happiness is not a zero sum game. I think people can be happy with, the more people that are happy, the better off everyone is going to be. But anyways, we're out of time. Let's wrap it up. What are we going to call this one?
RTS is real-time strategy. I wonder if there's like real intertwined strategy or something. I don't know.
Intertwine by itself is kind of a nice word.
Yeah. I mean, I'm willing to go there.
I kind of like that. It's like something you'd see on a PlayStation store, intertwine. Actually, that might be a game. But anyways, I think it's a nice way to tie that all together.
Is that you're thinking of Tangled or the Yarny game? What's the Yarny game?
That one is Unravel.
Unravel. Okay.
I think there's a game called Entwined. Maybe not. Doesn't matter. Anyways, let's go over to my idea today. I'm also pitching kind of an RTS type of thing, but it's not in that sense. It's more of kind of like a simulator RTS, where you are managing security guards, and I don't know if it's one building that you're, you know, securing, or whether it's multiple locations and you're kind of at the company level overseeing multiple guards, but basically I'm just kind of interested in, you know, since it's not cool to make games about the police anymore, like, let's kind of take it on to that kind of private security sector and see what it takes to, you know, really kind of like secure a building and make sure that its blind spots are covered and what can be done by a human versus what can be done by a camera. So anyways, all of that, I'm going to start the clock.
Like, how surveillance state-y do you want to get on this?
I'm thinking it's kind of you could do kind of like a top-down perspective on this building that you're overseeing. You can place, I'm thinking something like a prison architect or something kind of like that, where it's a little bit more kind of abstract and cartoony. You're not like an over the shoulder as a security guard. You're more kind of like a god's eye view overseeing things.
So what if you kind of have, in terms of like giving yourself that sort of zoomed out view of the whole plane, we're able to place cameras, or we're able to, am I like seeing through the lens of a camera that's way pulled out?
I'm thinking if we kind of want to use an, kind of ironic, ironically opposite game to base this on. I was thinking about, and I've thought about this game so much, I've owned it for probably a decade and I haven't gotten around to playing it. So like, I really should just like install it, put it on my calendar and like make time to play it. Cause I've thought about it so much for how little time I've actually spent with it. But anyways, game called Monaco, What's Yours is Mine, which is a kind of heist simulator, but more of an action heist. You're not really planning the heist as much as you are in a very kind of arcadey, colorful way, you know, going through the this kind of top-down world, all full of kind of, you know, hallways and rooms, like a Hotline Miami type of setup. But it's all very kind of strictly vision cone constricted. And so, you know, if your character can see something, then you can see it. And if not, it's completely an unknown space to you. So, you know, you're trying to basically secure whatever, you know, building you're in charge of protecting throughout, you know, one night at a time. But you can only see what you have, you know, literal kind of eyes on at the time. So you're trying to minimize costs as well. So you could hire 100 security guards. You're going to be you're going to be underwater quickly. You can hire one security guard to patrol and then put up 5 cameras. That's more cost effective, but, you know, trying to think about maximizing pay and minimizing the amount that you're, the amount of overhead.
Got it. While getting your maximum coverage.
Yeah.
Okay. Now I think I'm there. So I love the idea of, like, you know, with the Monaco stuff, it's like you're one sort of person kind of moving in and out. And I'm wondering if you do a little bit more of like almost a drone type of patrolling system that you have set up. So you're kind of placing these multiple markers around, and maybe you get really sort of basic, very basic programming logic. And so you could do things like let's go super basic here. Like if you see movement and then you have to put a qualifier on it, or else maybe it's too an expensive an operation for your little drone processor. But if you see movement on your right, then turn right or whatever, something like that, or then fire an alert. And so you have to like set up drones in really strategic patrolling areas and then set up the correct AI behavior to sort of catch the things that you're looking for.
Yeah. So I like this idea of constraining your vision somehow. So you can't see everything at once and you can't just easily mouse around this complex that you're trying to secure.
Yeah. Or maybe you can, but there's like a fog of war that you can't quite, you know, so you keep your wits about you.
I kind of like the idea that you have kind of a limited range of vision, but I mean, you can set cameras anywhere. And then if a camera sees movement, then the alarm will go off, a little blip on the side of the screen that shows you which camera sees movement. And then you have to fly your drone over there. And then if, you know, whatever set it off is still within the camera's vision cone, then, you know, you can get a good sense of what you need to protect yourself from. But sometimes it might just be kind of like chasing blips from camera to camera and not being able to kind of catch up and get a good look at it. Maybe it's sometimes a deer might hop in front of it and set it off and distract you from something that's more important happening on the other side.
Yeah, I think you then start to get into like a little bit more Eye of Sauron type of feel, where you distract the eye, get it looking in another direction, but it's like all seeing, but it's not fully all seeing. What else can we do? Like if you could like directly possess one of these sub drones or like attach yourself to it, or maybe even like, I don't know why, but I like the idea in this game being able to, if you travel between the drones, you almost have to follow like electrical lines or something. So there's if you hear an alert or hear a delay, if you're too far away and you have to make too many hops to get to the other drone, you might miss whatever, you know, is coming, or it might be too late. So you're always kind of bouncing between drones based on like what you think is going to potentially be the next detected threat.
So all of this is kind of like creating infrastructure to try to maximize the efficiency of surveying a building or whatever. Yeah. And so obviously the challenge would come in having to survey kind of bigger and bigger buildings with, you know, more and more kind of complicated structures, whether they're kind of multi-story, whether you are primarily tasked with patrolling the outside versus the inside. Maybe there's some rooms that you're just not allowed to go into, and so you have to kind of like use context to keep them safe. Maybe there's reasons why you would want somebody to break in to show you vulnerabilities. Yeah, I don't know.
How do you feel about the idea of if these are, let's say, if you have some patrolly robots, that what if we use like Roomba rules on them and say that they all can kind of run and they all have different battery capacities, so they can all sort of do their patrol for a set amount of time, and you are planning out or putting within different proximities like charge stations for them to quickly kind of juice back up to full power. And so when you're entering a level of this building or something, you yourself are like taking a moment and you almost have your setup phase where you're like, okay, I'm placing my chargers here, here, and here, and hopefully that should cover all my bases. And the goal is really to like make sure that you set your range such that your patrol bots will never run out of battery, because they'll always be within some proximity of this like potentially Tesla coil charging station or dock that they have to hit.
Yes. This, I think the idea of a kind of a coiling wire behind you is kind of comical in a way. You could be like a Roomba almost, like trying to patrol various areas. But I just love the idea of kind of getting the cord tangled on things and having to think about retracing your steps and potentially, you know, wasting time on your route to try to make sure that you don't get your cord caught up.
Yeah, I think if you do something that is like Roomba-like and then you add in some sort of player possession mechanic, I do like the idea of like, okay, this physical bot, like I don't like its particular route, or I don't like the auto route that it's kind of following or it's pathing. So I'm actually going to possess it and like train it on a new route because this route is more efficient. So there's sort of efficiency in the like hands-on training of each robot after you set them on their course.
Let's call that one there and let's shut it down and give it a name.
I wonder if there's like an all-seeing or... and eyes everywhere, the eyes in the back of your head. Have you heard the term referred to, a security guard being referred to as a rent-a-cop?
Yeah.
I wonder if there's like a rent-a-bot or some rent-a-bot security corporation or something there. Okay, this might be dumb enough to work. Instead of security guards, we have security cars. And they're all little RC cars or something.
It's kind of fun, like in a Toy Story type of setup.
Yeah.
Security cars. All right. I think that's as close as we're going to come today. So let's go for security cars and take it on to the listener pitch for the day. This comes from Mike Esquera again, who says, how could you add excitement to a 4X battle royale? A couple mechanics could be rising ocean levels, gradually reducing the size of the map, with natural disasters acting like battle royale red zones that force the players continually to migrate or expand their territory in order for some portion of their populace to survive. Let's go ahead and start the clock there. It's a real good strategy episode today.
Yeah, it's also some of those mechanics are a little bit what we were talking about earlier in terms of like those rising tides. So this works well. What are we thinking here? We've talked about this kind of scaling up, up, up of the 4X strategy games, but I think that idea of what if the battle royale is, instead of like each time the circle closes, let's say it's space. Let's set it in space for a second. Every time the circle closes, a star goes supernova and like all the gravity of a system changes. So potentially like planets in your control drift away into enemy territory, or like the whole universe is shaken up by these gravitomic shifts.
So you have to kind of excuse my ignorance, but are 4X games necessarily taking place like in space, or are there also kind of like ground-based 4X games as well?
Oh yeah, I would say Civ is a 4X-ish. What are the 4Xs? They're like diplomacy, resource management. We should know this by now. 4X. What are the 4Xs? I'm Googling it. Shame on me. I play 4X games. I don't know. Explore, expand, exploit, exterminate are the 4Xs. So exploration, expansion, I guess exploitation is resources and extermination is warfare.
So I like this idea of kind of rising water levels. Makes me think of like having to move your capital city. You could say that the lowest basins are going to be the places that have the most resources that you can gather. And planting your capital city there is going to be, it's going to be the most advantageous. And so that gives you a couple of options. You can either be the type of community that, you know, maybe you get into one of those kind of real lowland material rich areas early in the game, you know, kind of get as much as you can out of them before the water levels rise.
Yeah.
And then try to kind of like nimbly, you know, you've made the best use of your capital city. Now you're just going to be relying upon, you know, nomadic tribes and tent communities throughout the rest of the game, but you've got your wallet full of cash, and so you can make it work for you. Maybe you invest in ways to move your capital city, kind of like a Howl's Moving Castle type thing, put little robot legs on it, walk it up the hill. Maybe you don't build one single large city, you build kind of a network of smaller cities, kind of, you know, working your way
distributed up the mountain.
Yeah, yeah. So if one of them goes underwater, it's not a big deal. You know, maybe you start at the top of the mountain and make the long journey down, but then you never have to think about moving the city. And there are, you know, certain advantages to not having to research ways to protect the city because you know you're always going to be safe. So lots of trade-offs, lots of different strategies that could be used to counteract that.
One of the things, I've never really played a 4X strategy game that has something like this, but I'd be curious to see what would happen if you fused in some really, like, I almost would call it crafting or experimentation. So very often, you know, when you move up the tech trees or up and down the tech trees or the eras in these games, they're like a preset map of technologies or policies and things that you adopt or choose not to adopt. I think it would be interesting to know, to be on a planet knowing that, and maybe you set it like a No Man's Sky-ish sort of thing where like you play on different planets and different planets have different disasters or different sorts of levels of volatility, right? Maybe a volcanic planet will be, you know, will have all sorts of different tactics you want to use here. But I like the idea of being able to, as a player, research really basic fundamental technologies and then combine them in ways that might benefit me. So like in the Howl's Moving Castle example, like, okay, I've researched robotics, and then we've researched artificial limbs, and we have researched like mass construction equipment or construction equipment that's like able to move huge, huge masses of objects. And it's only with those three things kind of unlocked or through some system where you can like take technologies or specific things you've researched and almost put them in a, to use a Diablo term, like a Herodric cube. Like, hey, what if I put this combo of technologies together and I just give my scientists time to sit on that? Then will they like come up with something new and unexpected based on previous knowledge? And that is what unlocks the robot leg solution, where maybe another city invents heat shielding and they become volcano proof with shielding or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's another interesting option, is you could kind of shield yourself from whatever this global threat is. And so, you know, if the water level is rising, then you can create kind of an Atlantis bubble type of situation and then just continue to live underwater and continue to take advantage of those high value areas.
Then a third city decides to like research like genetic manipulation and just turns their people into fish people.
I'm kind of curious if this is what the futuristically set Anno games are doing. I know that there's some level of and making peace with nature versus overcoming it. And I want to make sure we're not stepping on their toes.
Yeah, it's interesting, right? It's like there's always the sort of like technology method of handling something, the brute force method of like sheer infrastructure is going to get you there. And, you know, potentially a lot of human sacrifice. And then the sort of, no, we like exactly how our city is now or where it's located now. Maybe you end up in a strategically advantaged position on a map, or you get a great city placement, and you're like, no, if we move this city, some of the resources we'll have access to will become limited. So we are going to choose to adapt as much as possible to anything that will let us stay in place. And so you almost find that out at the start of a match or something.
Yeah. And so maybe also you don't know what the threat is going to be until you start seeing some of the warning signs that don't come until maybe like 10 minutes into the game. And so you kind of have to prepare for anything.
And I like the warning signs battle royale style being like telegraphing, right? Like the first warning sign, you're like, okay, now we've narrowed the field from 100 possibilities down to 10 possibilities. And then at the second signal, you'd be like, okay, only these three remaining things are this, then this, you know, and having that like paying off that knowledge of like, no, this is the actual order that happens when this X natural disaster is going to occur.
Yeah. And maybe there's some rounds where a natural disaster doesn't occur at all. And so
right.
those countries that, you know, kind of like America, that don't take any precautions and just kind of go in blindly and hope for the best, end up coming out ahead.
Or, hey, if we're going to do that too, maybe we could build in some kind of system where if multiple cities who are not allied end up working together, you can actually delay or stop altogether a disaster. So if the match, if people can cooperate long enough to live, then maybe there's actually a victory where you all kind of like agree to live in peace. There's the actual peaceful victory to a 4X strategy game. Nobody gets taken over. Can you imagine?
That'd be interesting. Anyways, we're out of time on that one again. Let's go ahead and close it down and give it a name.
All right, hear me out. 5X.
What does the 5X stand for?
I guess the 5X is actually like resolution, right? It's like you explored, expanded, exploited, but I guess you didn't exterminate or take over in any way. You actually like lived in harmony. It's an actual fifth dimension to the way a game could end.
Okay. All right. Yeah. I think 5X kind of gets us where we need to be. Cool. 5X. Thank you again to Mike Esquera for sending that in. If you would like to submit a pitch of your own, and we are dangerously low on pitches at this point, so we would appreciate anyone sending them in. You can do so by emailing us playwrightcast@gmail.com. You can go to playwrightcast.com/pitch, or you can tweet us at playwrightcast. In all of those instances, it is spelled PLAYWRITECAST.
Special thank you to Protodome for the use of our theme song Hello World off the album Blue Noise. Very good. Go give it a listen and check out the Cane and Rinse podcast Emporium, really. I'm on the site right now. Ori is on here and Sound of Play. I'm looking at Beat Saber. I'm looking at the Sausage Factory talking with Upper Room Games. I'm looking at our own show and the snake is eating itself. I don't know what's going on anymore.
Anyways, let's go out of the show today with a redacted game. I think that you are quizzing me today.
Something is rotten in the redacted, and you're being played for a sucker. Meet redacted. Redacted at the Department of Redacted. He sells redacted to redacted on their 4-year journey to redacted. But there's trouble in paradise. Help redacted untangle himself from a conspiracy that threatens his very salvation.
That threatens his very salvation, you said?
Yes.
What a strange way to end that. Huh, okay, so let me try to parse through what I just heard. So there is, so you're playing somebody who maybe not necessarily a salesman, but somebody that does sell something to somebody else?
Somebody who Well, they're a... I guess so. Yes.
Okay.
I don't know if you would strictly call this profession a sales profession, but you absolutely could.
Okay. Maybe they sell like a service or something like that, but...
Yes.
All right. So walk me through some of this earlier stuff here. So you're being played like a fool, something out of four-year journey.
Yeah. So something's rotten in the redacted and you're being played for a sucker.
Yeah. Okay.
Meet redacted. Redacted at the redacted. Sorry. These are all very important things. He, which I guess is a hint, right? Sells redacted to redacted on their... Did I redact this? Yeah. On their four-year journey to redacted. But there's trouble in paradise. Help redacted untangle himself from a conspiracy that threatens his very salvation.
Okay. Gosh, there's so much to think about here. So a four-year journey seems to be like a very important part of this. Trying to think of... Oh, gosh. Yes, I feel like I know what this is. Is this Grim Fandango?
It absolutely is Grim Fandango.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, so you're Manny Calavera, who sells people death insurance or something like that, or travel packages
to escort Manny them Calavera. Across. Yeah. Travel agent at the Department of Death.
Oh, that's good one. Man, did you have any kind of associated like trivia or anything go along with that, or was that just
so Grim Fandango? Oh yeah, because right, we forgot. So all the awards and rankings, it is the number 2 best PC game of 1998.
Wow,
the number 4 most discussed PC game of 1998. And the 3rd most shared PC game of 1998. So 1998, big ups to Grim Fandango. But yeah, it's got a 94 Metacritic, 9.1 user score. Of course, it's LucasArts adventure game, Grim Fandango, October 14th, 1998. Wow, it showed up at the end of the year and it went straight to number 2, 4, and 3, respectively.
Wow. And that's interesting. I mean, 1998, like that's... nothing to sniff at. Like that was the year of Half-Life and Thief the Dark Project and Baldur's Gate. And I mean, that's just PC stuff. StarCraft.
I mean, it's certainly of an era, but I remember just being a kid and going into you name whatever your local PC shop is. We had a lot of CompUSAs in my area growing up and just seeing that box in Manny's face, the skeleton in the suit, such an evocative image. And I think, it's good that you didn't get stumped on it, because I think you'd really be disappointed with yourself if you didn't get Grim Fandango. But you got it in 1. All right. So now I've got to step up my game for next week.
That's good. That felt like a good difficulty level. Like I always say, when I play video games, I want to always win, but feel like I always earned it.
Yeah. That's like how people, like myself included, just go nuts when you're playing like an XCOM or something and you're like 95% chance to hit. You'd be like, well, that means that there's no way it doesn't hit, right? That's 100%.
It's like when I'm playing fighting games and, you know, I'm like, this is the difficulty level feels just right when I'm winning every match by just a hair. But I'm still winning every match. It's not even like a 50-50.
Right. So. Which is what a true average would be, right? There's a really cool, and this is for listeners too, if you want to kill some additional time this week, other than supporting the Kane and Runes Patreon, which you should absolutely do, is go check out. There's a old GDC talk from Sid Meier about fairness in games and how as they like tweaked Civ and they did playtests with Civ, when, you know, Civ used to have the kind of like, this is going to be a 30 versus a 27. And like, there is a good likelihood that it will succeed or something like that. Any time where you suggested the person would succeed, but the person did not succeed, it elicited a strong negative reaction. Mm-hmm. So they ended up like cheating all of their numbers more in favor to what they were actually saying on screen make it actually quote feel fair, which is such an interesting piece of game design.
That's cool. Well, anyways, that's our show for the day. Thanks for joining us, everyone. We'll catch you again next week.
Bye.